In the book, I do say oil theft. They took it without paying for it for years, and the people I interviewed on the record told me they did it with prior knowledge. They knew they were taking oil without paying for it. And again, it was a small percentage, but it always made sure Coke was on top. They put their thumb on the scale, and they took enough to always be on top. And what's so illuminating about this is that it is a very complex world, this oil collection. You can never quite measure oil perfectly. And Coke would often just, when they were in a gray area like this, push it to the absolute limit and often evade accountability for actions like that.
So criminal charges brought or avoided, and how is that used as a model for how they operated in the future?
The United States Senate investigated this and just categorically showed that Coke stole oil, as they said in a Senate report. The case was then shifted to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Oklahoma City in 1989. I interviewed the senior investigators on that case, the assistant U.S. prosecutor on that case. The investigators were convinced Coke had broken the law. They were trying to push the case higher. The case eventually fell apart. And a big part of that was that in 1989, Coke Industries realized they needed to become more politically engaged. As we've said, Charles Koch was a libertarian. He tried to let Washington do its thing, but he realized that if he didn't have a large political apparatus, he could be the target of investigations like this. So this was when Coke really built the political network as we know it. And Coke began lobbying U.S. senators like Kansas, that then Senator Kansas Bob Dole. They began actually lobbying the Native American communities and convincing the local leaders of the Osage community that Coke had not stolen oil. And, you know, Osage leaders like Charles O. Tillman gave comments saying that Coke had not stolen oil, and then Coke's political apparatus would amplify that message in Washington, D.C. And Charles O. Tillman told me later in an interview that he really regretted his statements because he only later realized Coke had, in fact, stolen oil. But these political efforts helped cloud the picture. They painted federal prosecutors as being overzealous. And you really did see the beginnings of a playbook here of this multifaceted 360-degree political effort that seeks to change the public conversation, lobby lawmakers, and help sort of push the regulators back off the plate, if you will.
Chris, we only have a minute, and I wanted to get to a comment you made in your book. In many ways, Donald Trump posed a greater political threat to Charles Koch's political agenda than Barack Obama. Explain.
Charles Koch wants Republicans to be libertarian and back off the private enterprise. Donald Trump has a different vision. It's this America First vision. Donald Trump has made clear he will intervene in markets, whether it's through tariffs, trading up trade deals, or all the rest of it. The Koch political network knows that if Donald Trump wins re-election, he will reshape the Republican Party for a generation. We will have an American First Republican Party, not a libertarian public party. And that's why you see this tug of war between Koch and Trump. Now, Koch supports Trump's efforts to deregulate, but it is fighting him on these other fronts. And who knows where this will ultimately end up.
Well, we're going to do part two with you and post online at democracynow.org. Christopher Leonard, author of the new book, Cokeland, The Secret History of Coke Industries and Corporate Power in America. Christopher Leonard is a business reporter whose works appeared in The Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Fortune, Bloomberg, Business Week. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
The do's and don'ts of safe binding. Do, stretch regularly, practice good posture, take 2 days off each week, go a size up for swimming or exercise, and wash your binder when it starts to smell or pick up dirt. Don't, sleep in your binder, bind in sizes too small, try to put on a wet binder, pull a binder over your hips, wear your binder for more than 8 to 10 hours, and never bind with ACE bandages, tape, or anything else. Be strong. Be proud, be happy, be safe, be you. A message from GC2B.co.
Free Village Chamber Players provides free, high-quality chamber music for the community in spaces central to the Three Village community. Instead of concert halls, they bring the music to schools, libraries, churches, retirement homes, and other venues available to all. All of their concerts are free, and their goal is to reach as many people as possible and build the arts in our local neighborhood. For more information on what they do and where they'll be playing, go to their website at www.3vcp.org and stay tuned to WUSB-FM Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this glorious Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I am joining you tonight.
You literally
on this
are. Right?
Tuesday.
On the other side of the room. Everything okay over there?
Oh, yeah. I was just reattaching a piece to a mic stand that was near my microphone here in the Norm Preslin studios at Stony Brook.
You know, your voice is extra gentle tonight. I have to have you all the way up for some reason.
Yeah, this is...
Why are you talking so mellow?
This is Coffee House, Kyle.
Coffee House, Kyle.
Yeah, there will be a poetry reading and...
Uh-huh. What happened to
acoustic
club,
set later?
Club Kyle that, you know, shouted.
Well, you know, things have taken a mellow turn here now that the fall time is coming.
God, they're not going to go well.
I've noticed many of the indeciduous trees are...
Indeciduous?
Beginning to...
You mean indigenous.
I mean deciduous trees are changing color, and the indeciduous trees are looming casually over the rest of us here in
Stony Brook. A prize to anyone who can identify these musical notes. But you won't. Nobody can. Yes, this is Off the Wall, where we treat our audience with contempt. And talk about the things that have been going on over the last week and theorize to what might be going on in the next week and various other things like that. So, here we are.
And apparently people like listening to that, so we're going to give you more of that tonight.
Throngs of people, really.
No, they write in, they tell us, I really enjoy listening to the two of you talk about things that I would not have another person to talk to about, I vicariously listen to your conversation, because otherwise I would just be talking to no one, and so they can just eavesdrop, which is slightly more normal than shouting and talking into the abyss to no one.
I have an offer for those people. You can actually talk to us, and then you will have someone to talk to. We'll open up the phone lines tonight. You know, we've tried this many, many times, and it always results in problems because we wind up literally opening up the phones and see if something's wrong with them because they don't light up. So we think the light's broken. We think the phone line might not be connected, but no, it turns out that people just aren't calling most of the time. Sometimes the phone is broken. So, you know, if when we do open up the phone lines, people call in, we won't have that problem. You know, we won't be taking apart the phones. So
your phone call tonight will lead to 100% more call-ins.
That's right. And it puts a spring in our step, too. We're able to walk out of here with our heads high, say that, you know what, we talked to somebody tonight.
Well, and it's our gift to you because this is community radio, and community radio doesn't have to abide by any kind of programming requirements. This is freeform radio. We get to have a discussion, we get to bring you in, we get to read your letters, we get to do whatever, really, we want. We can steer the ship, as it were.
That's right.
So, here we are, in the, I would say the bridge, if this were a spaceship, or a vessel of sorts.
Many times I've thought of this place as a spaceship.
I think you're at the helm.
Well, right now I am, yes, and you're the first officer, I guess.
I've been called worse.
Yeah, so you're number one in the Star Trek world.
Okay.
Sometimes we have a communications officer and a chief of security, of course.
But the great thing is we can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. We can go anywhere in the conversational universe.
That's true. That's true. We can talk about anything. Nothing's off limits.
That's our aim.
That's the beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So, we were at the G7.
We were.
It was an amazing event.
En français.
Yeah, in France, and you know, Macron was a gracious host.
It was at a lighthouse. I mean, let's just get that out of the way.
Was it at a lighthouse?
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole thing was basically on the coast or something.
Why was it at a lighthouse?
I can't remember. It started with a B, but yeah, the venue itself and where a lot of the dignitaries were arriving were essentially on this bluff on the coast, and the building itself was a lighthouse.
That's kind of cool.
It was neat.
That's kind of cool.
Better than a golf course.
Well, it is better than a golf course, and it's interesting you should bring that up, because apparently it's being hosted in the United States next year, no matter what. I don't know who decides this, but that's already been decided. So Trump is trying to host it at one of his properties, meaning that he stands to make a fortune just by having this event there. making the place a lot more famous and valuable, and also just making money that weekend that it happens.
After I heard that, I realized we need a Trump profiteering tally clock.
Well, it's just,
you know, that just shows how much money he's made since inauguration off the U.S. government, billable services, all that. I want to tally.
When he got into power, I'm not going to have any ties to my businesses. It's like we just stopped caring. You know, just do whatever
on so many levels.
Let's be corrupt right up front and just even announce that we're corrupt. You know, it's like the SCTV mayor Tommy Shanks, the corrupt mayor of Mellonville.
Yeah,
I don't know that reference.
I don't know that, but if you did get that reference, please write in and explain how funny you thought it was.
It's honest. It's saying, "Yeah, I'm corrupt. What about it?" You know, and you have that more and more. You know, you look at world leaders. You look at Bolsonaro. Oh my God, the leader of Brazil.
Hold on.
Okay, I'll hold on with my shock, my disgust.
I just wanted to say. What you're pointing out is that it is not that we don't care. It's that he is shameless in this. It was once that, you know, you might assume mm-hmm. those kinds of deal-making and machinations might be going on, or there might be kickbacks and these little things behind the scenes. Here he is on stage uh-huh. at a podium uh-huh. pitching this idea in the midst of all the other diplomatic priorities we have.
Right.
Somehow that pitch is supposed to land, you know, nice and neat in the midst of all the other tumult. I just want to point that yeah. out, how crazy weird that is, and like self-absorbed you have to be to present that, especially in the moment you have all the things going on in the world, Iran in China, and now, as you were just about to point out, Bolsonaro. Good Lord! I mean,
I can exhale now. Yes, Bolsonaro, the leader of Brazil, who is letting the Amazon rainforest burn. In fact, encouraging it to burn. This is what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with people who don't care so much that they're willing to let it be destroyed. They're eliminating regulations. They think climate change is a hoax. They think pollution isn't so bad. We are all paying the price for this, and we are all going to suffer for this. And so many people are going to lose their lives as a result. In fact, the whole human race might go extinct as a result of this. You know, you can't really exaggerate these things any more than that, because the reality has approached as much as you can possibly exaggerate. So the question is, what do you do about it when you have people? How is this any different from having a bunch of terrorists running around destroying everything that you value? We voted for them. That's the difference. The people of Brazil voted for this maniac, and it's really up to them to deal with it, to get rid of him now somehow. Get rid of him, save the planet, okay? And they're not the only ones. We have to do something about the mess we created here, and yes, we created that mess. People of Israel have to do something about the mess they created, people of the Philippines, et cetera, et cetera. Just more countries seem to be added on every week. But, you know, we are all in danger as a result of this nonsense that's going on. We need sane heads to prevail. And it's really, it's not so unreasonable, the things that people are saying, you know, let's cut back on pollution. Let's not burn down the forest. Let's not, drill for oil everywhere and make species go extinct. And let's look into things like solar power and wind turbines and things like that. And let's take care of people rather than let people starve to death. And let's make sure everyone can be healthy. I mean, these are not things that are controversial. Why are these controversial issues? Education, everyone should get that. Everyone should have a place to live. Why is that a divisive issue? You know, I can't figure it out.
I think logic is prevailing, and in part at least socially or as far as consciousness in general is concerned. Mm-hmm. But what you have here is sort of the death throes of an entrenched industry, and I think the oil and primary contributors to carbon emissions and thus climate changes, as well as the denialism, like the entirety of a campaign against real actual science about this particular issue, This is the end of that. This is where they're still entrenched as a hegemonic power. They're the energy of choice in the world. And so to a degree, I liken it to sort of when the bar's closing, it's like 2 a.m., uh-huh. you know, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's buying out the bar, and all of a sudden, whatever the drink is, it makes sense. So they're investing and trying to make it seem as though their aged industry will last when it isn't. It's literally something that is running out of time, but also, you know, peak oil itself is something that has come to pass. I mean, a lot of people recognize that it's a finite resource we're running out of. We need to kind of at least start moving towards alternatives. So to me, it just is like, yeah, you want to invest in this? All right, any crazy idea? Oil sand? Yeah, we'll squeeze oil out of rocks. Perfect. Yeah, that's it. So every little thing they can get funding for to make it seem like they're pushing a futuristic paradigm while they greenwash and deny, it just fits in that kind of let's just buy out the bar. Any drink goes, no matter what it is. Until they can't get any more.
What kind of bar runs out of a drink at night?
I don't know.
And what kind of bar closes at 2 a.m., 4
a.m.? That's not the point. Right.
Good. Yeah, good analogy.
This sort of analogy. Uh-huh. I'm feeling like it just is, you know, the barreling ahead and the spiteful, blatant ignorance that is thriving in this moment, I feel is a death throw of you know, again, making it appear as though this entrenched industry, yeah, they have all the infrastructure, they have all the deals, contracts, connections because of the historical precedent, but in the future it's not as rosy or not as certain. So if they can kind of ink things that look and appear as though they're a stable force for the future, they can kind of persist in this moment just a little longer to make a little bit more money, et cetera.
Really is a little bit more money. People can still get rich with changes in technology,
but
with
the
changes
point,
in pollution controls and things like that. Nobody is being starved out of their industry.
But it's they are the thing you have to realize, though, is that the inertia for those initiatives doesn't come, you know, it comes against steep competition and a climate of ignorance where we're not accepting facts and actually entertaining new solutions. And it's just far too, they themselves, those interests, I think, would have to admit that there are costs that are associated with them pivoting and going in a completely different direction. And they're very uncomfortable with those kinds of seismic changes in what has worked for them for so long.
Hey,
so
you know they what? I got news for them. Life is full of changes. Sometimes you have to pivot. Sometimes you have to move in a different direction. That's what it's all about. Deal with it. But don't let us pay for your hesitation.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that coupled with the denial is shortchanging the very slim opportunity that we have to do an about face and go in a much more sustainable direction.
I just think we're too patient. Okay, I'm tired of being patient. I'm impatient with being patient. Yes, I can say that. What the people in Hong Kong are doing, they have it right. They're putting the pressure on constantly. Because they know what they want. They want democracy. They don't have it yet. So they're going to show up every single day until they get it. And we need to care more. And we don't. You know, there's all kinds of horrible things going on in our name. The immigration issue for one thing, foreign intervention for another thing, pollution, taxes, all kinds of things you can point at that are urgent, that need to be dealt with, that have to be changed. And they're not going to be unless we speak out and show up. And we just don't do it enough. That's something that really disappoints me. I think it's because people are programmed not to feel like they matter, not to feel like their voices count. And I just think we need a few examples of how these voices do count, how one person speaking up can make a difference, how 10 people showing up can actually make change. We need to stop telling ourselves that our voices are not being heard, that as an individual, we don't have the power to make change. we need to listen to each other. We need to not always be condemning and looking for fault in the people that we agree with on just about everything else. And we also, you know, we need to treat the people we disagree with respect as well. I've always said that, because otherwise it just turns into a personality issue. Logic should be on your side. Use that, and humor and various other things that open up doors and allow people to listen to what it is you're saying in the first place.
I truly believe that the monumental shifts that we will see are about, you know, little actions, because the forces that are dominant are sort of relying on people thinking that assumption you can't necessarily change, but the truth of the matter is it's really kind of a farce. It's just this veneer of something being immovable, but it's only immovable until you try to do something. It really doesn't take much, and no. I think people are vastly, vastly more powerful than they realize, and there are a lot of other ways. Also, you know, cool factor, and you know, the sharing of new things and that kind of marketing, I think in and of itself will be hard to go up against when you kind of especially recognize the interconnectedness of all these industries, right? Mm-hmm. Just today I saw a commercial for a major motorcycle company that has an electric motorcycle now.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of people that might say, oh, you know, this is, you know, one type of engine or one type of technology, and I'll never think about anything in the world. All of a sudden, their favorite brand is marketing something cool.
Yeah.
And something that has zero emissions. What happens when those become collector's vehicles in like a year or, you know, 2 years, because people realize that that private entity shifted? And they came out with something cool, they marketed it the right way, and people adopted it. It wasn't rocket science. They just had to go and realize that the future depended on them reaching a target audience that actually cares, and they have to provide a product that fits that that market segment.
Doing the same thing year after year is almost always the wrong thing to do. And I think that's something we need to implement as much as possible. Driving the same kind of car, eating the same kind of food, having the same kind of mentality towards certain issues, not thinking about alternatives, not thinking about different ways of doing things.
It's risky. Yeah, there's risk.
Of course,
you gotta take those risks. But by trying those things, those little shifts, all of a sudden there's buzz, there's sentiment. People think that, in fact, the way we used to think is actually not right, and the dominant opinion, the attitudes about whatever you're talking about or whatever product or concept, they change. And that shift, you know, when companies and, you know, entities, bureaucracies, regulators, whomever, when they're ready for those shifts and they have the right kind of legislation or they have the right kind of service or something to match that moment, I think it's, you know, a lot is possible, and those immovable things seem much more malleable, and they're less entrenched, as I so often cite.
Do you remember when people said you can never have a no smoking train, you know, riding commuters, they need to smoke on the train? Well, you don't have them anymore. We survived. Then there was the no smoking section. No smoking section. Of course they did. Yeah.
On trains?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, there was a smoking car. Oh, my God.
A car?
A whole car. In fact, it was a whole train before that, but then it was a whole car.
On the LIRR?
On the LIRR, on every train.
Really?
Maybe in the subways. I don't even know. Maybe somebody can tell me about
that. I want to know when subways banned smoking, but that's interesting. Just the
no,
regional.
No, there was a smoking train. In fact, conductors complained because they had to go through that every day.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times to take tickets. But then they got rid of the smoking car, and there were all this outrage about that. Then they got rid of smoking on the platform, more outrage. Remember when restaurants were forced to build non-smoking sections, And then they turned into smoking sections because they got smaller.
Yeah.
And then there was just no smoking at all. And then the same thing happened in bars. Okay, you can point to this and say, wow, it's a conspiracy against smokers. But you know what? That's a good conspiracy because it kills you. And people realize that now. And people smoke less. Yeah, we adopted. We adapted. We got there.
Do we need to cite class action case law to get to the bottom of that? Yeah, the tobacco industry. They were taken
cite
to task.
Tuberculosis wards in hospitals. That's pretty much all the evidence
and
you need.
Emphysema.
It doesn't stop there. Recycling, the plastic bag ban here in Suffolk County, all kinds of things that we have adapted to because it makes sense. And yeah, there's always pushback at the beginning. There's always, you know, people that will say this will never work, it'll destroy us, and it doesn't. And we move on, and we're smarter for it, and we're healthier for it. So many examples of that we should be much further along on, that we really need to get our asses in gear.
Truly.
Anyway, getting back to the
G7, I
thought it was really interesting how the whole thing kind of played out. It went by so fast. Trump was over there, of course, and everybody was kind of worried about what he was going to do, what he was going to say, and they were just trying to be polite to him and all that. But I love how they brought in the Iranian foreign minister as kind of a surprise guest, and Trump really couldn't do anything about that. But I think that sort of said, you know what, we're going to keep talking to these people. Because, you know, we have a deal with them. We intend to honor that deal, even if you don't. And we want this to work out, even though you and Bolton and all the other lunatics want to have war. We're not going to play that game. So I thought that was kind of cool. But then the media started reporting that Trump claimed that China had called and wanted to work out a deal concerning all the trade issues and various tariffs and things like that. The way they reported it, I don't know if you noticed this, but they kept saying Trump claimed that China called. Nobody said China called. They all said Trump claimed because they know that he's a liar. They know that he makes things up. And they know that him saying that China called does not mean that China called. And sure enough, a couple of days later, China is saying no phone calls took place over the weekend that Trump claims showed its willingness to talk again. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhen Shuang said, I have not heard of the situation regarding the two calls that the U.S. mentioned in the weekend. And on Monday, he denied that the calls had taken place. Regretfully, the U.S. has further increased the tax rate on China's exports to the U.S. This extreme pressure is purely harmful to both sides, not constructive at all. Think about it. Think about where we are, where the President of the United States makes up a story about a foreign country calling him to work out a deal when they've done no such thing. I mean, how do we recover from this kind of nonsense that's going on? And then, you know, you look at the things that he is talking about. Of course, you have to look at Twitter to see what he's talking about. And he's saying, I never said that I wanted to nuke hurricanes. I wanted to drop nuclear bombs into hurricanes to keep them from hitting the United States. Okay, you know what? Even if he never said that, the fact that we're talking about that and believing it might be possible, that's pretty telling. But a lot of people say he did, in fact, ask about whether nuclear bombs and hurricanes could stop them. And then the other thing is he's denying that there are any bedbugs at that place that he wants to have the next G7 meeting at.
Doral.
I've never heard of this place. But apparently it's hurting, and this would really help it by having the G7 there. But the fact that he's tweeting about bedbugs at the place, this is what the President of the United States is doing now. Come on, people. I don't care what side you're on. You have to realize this is insane. This is nuts. We can do so much better.
That was revealing, I think, over the weekend. The moment when there was discussion of whether he had said this or not, and he basically said, this is how I negotiate. That was, to me, that kind of Wizard of Oz, Toto pulling the curtain back a little bit. Him stepping outside of this crucial diplomatic function over in France, him having to explain, well, this is what I do when I'm negotiating and trying to cite art of the deal and all of that, it just was so revealing, and it felt very much like the curtain just being pulled back ever so slightly to reveal his internal machinations and the mania that is these explanations of how he's coming to the negotiations with China or Iran, you fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. But it really felt like a very self-referential moment, or like this out-of-body thing he had to go through explaining, oh yeah, I negotiate this way, it's in my book, or whatever, you know, and so on. It was surreal to me.
Very much so. And that's waiting for the balloon to come and take him away.
Yes.
As happened in that film. Mm-hmm. Classic film, The Wizard of Oz. And speaking of classic films, it is time for us to speak of our classic film of the week. As you may know, Kyle and I are going through the Academy Awards year by year, and we're up to 1954 now. 1954, the film that won, the film that came out in 1954 at the 1955 ceremony, the film was On the Waterfront. And we just saw that a couple days ago, and that, Kyle, I gotta say, that film really had me on the edge of my seat. It's about dock workers in New Jersey, and the corruption, dealing with the mob, dealing with hard work and social issues of all sorts.
Work stoppages and unions,
mm-hmm.
loyalties to union bosses. And I think it wasn't as a positive light on unions at all, actually.
No.
Whereas the movie about coal miners, I think that was about six films ago.
Yeah, the Welsh coal miners.
Correct. Right. Yeah, that was a little bit more had a lot more tones of solidarity and stuff like that. This was a lot more introspective, but critical of that.
I'll tell you something interesting about it. It doesn't make unions look very good. When Arthur Miller, the playwright, was approached to write a screenplay based on the story, he was told that to make this work, instead of having it be union people running things, it should be communists. Yeah, communists should be in charge. Now remember, this is the mid-50s, when the McCarthy hearings were in full swing.
Yeah, it's the height of the Red Scare, right?
And basically, having them be communists, that's something that we can all unite against.
Galvanize.
But think of how weird it would be, having communists running the docks in New Jersey. It didn't make any sense. So he refused to do it, and didn't have any part in the production. And that wasn't actually carried on into the final script anyway. But Ilya Kazan, the director, has, as you may know, has a history of spilling names to the McCarthy Commission, basically turning people in for being alleged communist. And basically, I don't know if you picked up on this. I didn't pick up on this until I read about it later. But there's a major part of the film is when Marlon Brando's character is basically being pressured to testify against the mob, against the people that that are ruining things for everybody, that are intimidating, killing, all sorts of stealing, all sorts of horrible things. So does Marlon Brando continue with the charade and continue with the corruption, or does he go to the authorities and start naming names? A parallel to what Ilya Kazan did in his eyes. Naming names, being a hero, protecting his country. You see the parallel there.
Interesting. So there was that communism thematically, that undertone.
Well, he put it in there.
Right,
He basically was trying to redeem himself, because a lot of people were coming out against what he did.
But without
to this day, they come out against what he did.
Without going like full Stranger Things, where like the Russians are working under a mall or something.
Yeah, but those weren't communist Russians. Those were just crazy Russians.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But in this particular case, they were good old-fashioned mobsters in New Jersey. It was a really good tale, really good scenery. A lot of it was all filmed on location too. I know people in Hollywood wanted to film it on a back lot out there and were very upset that they couldn't. But I think the film was so much better for that, for the fact that they were able to have real scenery.
Yes, it's good they relented. Their self-importance is second only to New Yorkers.
And, you know, there was another thing, too. There was a whole parallel with pigeons and hawks. I don't know if you noticed that. They kept mentioning hawks in New York City, which exist to this day, red-tailed hawks. And also, there was a pigeon coop up on the roof that was a continuing story that went on throughout the film. But there was a point where the workers were lining up, waiting to be called to get onto the boat so they could do their longshoreman jobs. Apparently, you need a token. You need a token to actually get past the point and be hired for the day.
And a supervisor would choose you and hand you that token, like a subway token.
Now, take a look at the scene where he has a handful of these tokens, and he throws them out into the courtyard, and everybody runs to the tokens and is basically bobbing their heads trying to pick them up just like pigeons. Yeah. So, I don't know if that was intentional, but it's really kind of cool to look at that scene and say, wow, there's a real pigeon-hawk thing going on. Of course, the mobsters being the hawks. But anyway, an amazing film, one of the best films I think we've seen so far. Marlon Brando, first time we've seen him.
He was a very brooding character.
Very brooding, yes, very brooding. And Carl Malden was in it, too. You might remember him from the streets of San Francisco. He was this priest that was in everybody's business.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and he was also the spokesperson for American Express Traveler's Checks. I remember that from being a kid.
And it was this interesting buffer, that sort of religious character being a foil for morality, mm-hmm. when there really is no, God, I almost said lodestar. There's no kind of guiding compass, or he's a stand-in for that moral guide or lack thereof in any of those situations, and ends up diffusing various situations and becoming an important part of the story as the characters navigate the corruption and the lack of work.
If you've never seen it, definitely see On the Waterfront. We're going to see the short sequel that followed On the Waterfront again.
What?
Oh, I didn't tell you about that. Yeah, it's short, though.
All Quiet on the Waterfront.
Yeah. So we're going to continue with our Academy Award playback, I guess. And also we see a foreign film, because every year, except for one year, there was a foreign film that was named as the best film, and then the American film. So our next year will be the films from 1955, and hopefully next week we'll have something to report based on that. So it's... shut the thing down and continue with
ow.
Well, you're not supposed to touch it. I know that by now.
Yeah, you're right.
Film projectors. If you have a film projector, don't get rid of it. They're worth something.
I thought it cooled down fast enough.
They don't cool down. No.
It's aluminum.
Will burn you.
Okay.
Our phone number is 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-WUSB for those of you who still have letters on your phone. We'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts, opinions, theories, ideas, suggestions, insults, compliments?
Don't call collect.
No, you know what? Try to call collect. I don't think it's going to go through. I don't think you can make collect calls to the university.
Do collect calls sure even exist?
Can you make a collect call to a cell phone?
I would like to know that.
On TV, when we're watching TV of people in prison,
They're
calling cell because everyone has a cell phone and they're calling collect from a prison. I don't think you can do that anymore. I think you have to pay for your call in advance or something.
I like how prison phone systems are so bad that smuggling phones is like the easier thing than dealing with it. They just completely bypass prison scam phone systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, all right, do you want a flip phone or a smartphone?
Wow. Hey, we have a phone call. Let's see who's out there. Hold on a second. I've got to press the right buttons. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
How you doing? Brad from Brentwood.
Brad from Brentwood. How you doing?
Okay. I saw something in the media today, and I'm not sure what it was or where it is, but it's over in the Stony Brook area, I believe. Some presentation about telephones.
Really? A presentation about telephones? We should know about this.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling you. I wish I had it up or was sure what it was.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah, tell us as much as you remember, Brad.
You just got it.
That's it?
That's everything. Wait, where did you see this?
On the internet.
On the internet. Okay, that narrows it down.
Right. I'm sorry.
Brad, no. We'll get this. We'll get this. And it's something that's happening now, not something that happened 10 years ago.
No, not on the internet. In a newspaper. Wait a minute. Let me get the paper.
A newspaper. Right. He has a newspaper. He has an actual newspaper in his house. I'm so excited.
We're getting somewhere.
Wow. You realize how few people have newspapers anymore.
No, it's a hometown shopper. It's not a...
How does that still exist?
We just subscribed to Sunday Newsday only, and they failed to deliver it more than half the time. We've had the subscription for about 8 or 10 weeks. We've only gotten about 5 of them.
Brad, are you on a cordless phone by chance?
I am.
Not a cellular phone, a cordless phone.
Yes.
Wow, see, I can tell the difference. If that was a skill, I'd do well at it.
I have it.
Okay. All right. Everybody quiet. Let's hear this.
around the island, the store says Newsday's Hometown Shopper. Hometown Shopper Long, hometownshopperli.com. Okay, everyone can look at it.
All right. Well, yeah, Stonybrook exhibit. Read to us what it says.
Stony Brook exhibit, Journeys Through Time, now through September 29th. From a 1940s radio and rotary phones to present-day iPhones and more are on display in this exhibit at WMHO's Education and Cultural Center, Main Street. Hours 10 a.m. to 5, daily. Phone number 631-689-5888.
Wow.
There's also WMHO.org, and I don't know what that means.
I think it's Ward Melville something. WMHO.
Office.
Yeah, it might be Ward Melville Historical Organization. I'll look it up.
Cultural Center. What? We used to play Walt Whitman from South Huntington. We used to play you guys in ice hockey.
Wow.
Where Ward Melville was.
Uh-huh. Well, Ward Melville was my alma mater. That's
I gotcha.
Where I went to high school.
Yeah.
And Ward Melville's father, Frank Melville, donated the land for the university that we're on right now. A little bit of history there.
Right.
Wow.
Well,
Brad, thank
I'm
you so much. Thank you for that information, because that's really that's something we're interested in.
See, that's truly getting old when you have cobwebs from earlier in the afternoon, from something you just earlier in the afternoon. You
yes,
already have,
but,
I already have, not you, I already have, I'll keep it in the eyes. I already have cobwebs.
But
guys,
we didn't
I
know
wanted
about
to let
this.
You know.
Thank you so much.
How's Mr. Bernie doing?
He's doing well. As far as I know, he's doing great.
Great. Okay.
Thanks for your call.
I want to make room for the next guy.
All right. And there isn't one right now, but hopefully there will be soon. 631-632-9872. Kyle. We should be heading over to that exhibit, except they closed at 5.
5? Oh, dear. Well, yeah. That's informative. I know they could do better than 1940, though. Come on. You don't have a panel switch from the 20s or something? I mean, show me something that's, that needs a lot of oil.
It's a Ward Melville Heritage Organization. That's what WMHO stands for. I should know that. I went to the damn high school. You know, here's an interesting bit of trivia, okay, for those people keeping track. I went to Ward Melville High School, and Ward Melville died while I was in Ward Melville High School. Yeah. Kind of scary, huh? Okay, it gets better. I went to Robert Cushman Murphy Junior High School, and Robert Cushman Murphy died while I was in junior high school. Yeah. And then I went to Stony Brook University, and fortunately that wasn't named after anybody, so everyone was okay.
I like how no one cares about any of the schools I went to.
Well, we can talk about that, but let me just, before we move on to your schools.
Oh, no.
I heard a bit of trivia over the weekend that I thought was really, really interesting. Apparently, speaking of Robert Cushman Murphy, who was a local guy, rich guy, the people that you name schools after, he, for some reason, carved his initials into the bottom of box turtles. It's true. And box turtles live a long time. So apparently to this day, you can find box turtles on the North Shore of Long Island that have his initials carved into them. So if you see a box turtle walking around, pick him up, look at the bottom, see if you see RCM or RM on the bottom of it. And if so, then you've got a Robert Cushman Murphy box turtle.
It's probably very illegal to do that now.
Yeah, you can't do things like that anymore. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello, this is Andy from Center Reach.
Andy from Center Reach, how you doing?
All right. I used to work on campus about 20 years ago, and last Sunday I took a ride around, and I noticed it's almost impossible to get anywhere there. I couldn't find the new student activity center, and apparently they knocked the other one down, the old one?
Well,
the old student union.
Yeah, they didn't knock it down. What they did was they remodeled it. In fact, it's going to be opening, I think, in January.
They kept the core structure, but it basically revamped and renovated the entire facade, and it's all brand-new classrooms and stuff.
But, it's not impossible to get around. In fact, I think the way that the roadways are designed is a lot smarter than it used to be. They use traffic circles and things like that. It's big, and it can get confusing. But if you just explore a bit, I think you'll find everything you're looking for. The Student Activity Center, known as the SAC, that's in a different part of campus. And once you know where it is, you'll find it every time. But you know, this campus really keeps growing, keeps expanding. There's a new building on the athletic fields, and I'm not quite sure what that's for. But yeah, there's a center for wireless excellence across the road, and
that's getting an intersection and a light.
Yeah, they're doing all kinds of things. So
and a sidewalk.
Drive past the Frank Melville Library building. Is that closed all the time, or they just close it for the weekend?
If you mean by the old, by where the Union used to be, yeah, that's that dead ends there. I'm not sure if that's a permanent thing. You know,
it's a fire lane.
Yeah, I suggest park the car and just walk around, because it's really is quite an amazing place.
And the bridge.
Oh, God. The bridge to nowhere is no longer there. Well, you know, it's interesting. The story behind the bridge to nowhere, that dates back to the 1960s. And one of the reasons why they had to rebuild the Union was because they used the wrong concrete for the Union. Do you know this? The lecture center, which can withstand a nuclear blast, was built with the concrete that was supposed to be in the basement of the Union building. And the Union got the concrete that was supposed to be the lecture center. And and basically the Union building always leaked constantly. So that's one of the reasons why they had to rebuild it. The architect who was building the library looked at the blueprint backwards. The library was built backwards. So to this day, you'll see the other side of the bridge to nowhere on the other side of the Union. And since they built the building backwards, the bridge they were building from the Union to the library couldn't possibly meet the library. So it made a left turn and went to the Fine Arts Center instead. But now the whole thing's been torn down.
So there's no bridge at all.
No bridge. No bridge, and the Union is going to be a different type of building.
All right, how about this? Remember when walking under the bridge, you'd always get like a drop of water on your head?
Oh, yes. Yes. It was like being in a cave, you know, where you get some kind of creepy wet thing dropping on you.
That's about it. A little, and also, I don't know if you know this, but supposedly the campus was supposed to be the Berkeley of the East.
That's correct, and it was a name that they basically came up with in the early 60s, wanting Stony Brook to match the academic excellence of a university like Berkeley on the West Coast. What they got was a campus that matched the activism of a university on the West Coast. So especially during times of Woodstock and the anti-Vietnam War movement, it very much did live up to the name Berkeley of the East.
Now, supposedly the walkways and everything were designed so there wouldn't be any mass demonstrations.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that there were tunnels under the campus that allowed for the Suffolk County Police to conduct raids on dormitories very easily. And in fact, I remember when I went to school here, there was a professor, Hugh Cleland, who gave a presentation on the 1960s at Stony Brook, and there were all kinds of slides, pictures, documentation of all sorts. And you saw hordes of cops basically raiding dormitories, drug busts, all kinds of things like that, demonstrations everywhere. It was a different place than it is now.
Are you talking about the steam tunnels?
Yes. Well, they're tunnels that you can walk in, or you could walk in. I used to explore them when I went to school here. Now they're all locked, and there's cameras everywhere. But they extend throughout the entire campus.
Excellent. Keep up the work. Good work, guys.
Thanks for the call.
All right, take care. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Good night. And the memories, wow. Now, Kyle, I believe you want to talk about your schools over on the West Coast. No?
No, I was just thinking about how Stony Brook wishes it could compete in actual football leagues like the University of Washington.
Oh,
does.
I see. Okay, yeah. What's your team called?
Dream. Oh, it's an actual animal. You might be familiar. They're the Huskies, not the sea wolf.
Husky is a dog. It's a domesticated dog.
Yeah, a lot better than
sea wolves are not domesticated. I'll tell you that right now. You don't want to meet a sea wolf in an alley.
Yeah.
A husky, you know, you can coax him over with, you know, some Purina and then and put a collar on him.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we can beat you in football. I think we can.
Okay, let's talk about
how does that work?
Medical research.
No, wait. I want to arrange a game. But can they? I mean, it's not like in the NFL, all teams
they're
play
not
each other.
This,
how do you get to play a different school?
They're not in the same league. That's my point.
But what does that even mean?
Well,
they're playing the same game.
Stony Brook plays in the Pretend Flag Football League.
All right, that's it.
And the UW is in the Pac-10.
You're going to meet the Stony Brook football team downstairs.
Yeah,
they're
going to
be waiting for us.
Yeah, they're playing with the geese out on the field.
No. Oh, my God. Look, we have to... Okay, let's issue a challenge where the Stony Brook Seawolves...
It's definitely unconventional practice.
On some Saturday where they're not playing a football game, I'm sure there's one, we'll meet the Husky... What do they call them? That's the Washington Huskies? Is that the...
Yeah.
Okay.
I think winner is the word you're looking
for. Fine. Let's have him prove it. And we'll see. We'll see who gets to dominate there. Yeah. And the same challenge goes for basketball and lacrosse and soccer. And well, every single team has...
I don't know. Huskies basketball, pretty strong as well.
Yeah. Remember when school used to be about books and learning and studying and things like that?
We didn't even get into research science and aeronautics and medical, you name it.
We discover things here. We have a lot of
scientific types.
There's scientific people listening to us right
Stony
now.
Stony Brook is
in laboratories,
wringing their hands, trying to get 30,000 students here.
There's no problem getting 30,000 students here. We have to keep the other 60,000 away that want to come here.
I see.
Yeah. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. If you have any comments on apparently this academic rivalry that has just started up here, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well.
Don't get me started on my middle school.
Okay, you know what? We didn't call it middle school here. It was elementary school for me. I went to Nassaukeag Elementary School, and I'm proud of it. Grades 1 through 6. I wasn't here for the entire 6 grades. I was only here for the last 2. But I got a sense as to what it was all about. And then it was junior high school, and then it was high school. I never understood the middle school thing, but that's what most people do. Mm. Anything else?
All right, let's talk community colleges. Suffolk?
Yeah, I don't know much about the community college, but I know there's one down the road, Suffolk County Community College.
Yeah.
What about it?
I don't know, but as soon as I think of something, I will definitely say it in a menacing and disappointed way.
You know, it's free to attend SUNY schools now. You know, there's no tuition. You just have to be a New York State resident, and you have to commit to staying in the state for a few years afterwards. It's amazing how many people complain about that restriction. You're getting free tuition, and all you have to do is not move out of state as soon as you graduate. It's not much to ask for. And you know, people also complain, well, it doesn't cover books, it doesn't cover food, it doesn't cover housing. You know, okay, fine, but it's a start, it's something we didn't have before, and I think it's great, it's a great model for the other states.
It certainly would not be hard for your typical self-absorbed New Yorker to stay around in the place they talk up so much, so I don't see a problem there.
Well, anyway, it's great to see the campus growing. It's great to see the school's back in session as of this week. All these new students are here now, taking up parking spaces and getting in the way.
But oxygen.
Oxygen, yes. But it's really cool to see that enthusiasm, that level of enthusiasm, and just the activity and the inspiration that we get. And hopefully we get a whole lot of new people on the radio, too, because this is an incredible place. It changed my life. When I was a freshman, that's the first place I went was WUSB. Before I went to any classes, I went right to the radio station. Yeah, and that affected me for quite a while afterwards.
Yeah, come sort CDs.
That's a great thing to do. That's a great thing to
do. If you're new to campus and you want to get involved, you want to just be a fly on the wall, you can be a fly on the wall and organize our CD library, which is so rapidly being basically categorized. We're basically building a hard media library here at the radio station. Who knew years ago that it would all eventually find its way back here?
First we saved the vinyl, then we digitized the CDs, and now we're saving the CDs, and I'm sure that we'll find something else to save after that.
Well, not only saving, but like organizing them in a way where like only the ones we're really interested in keeping get to stay, and it's like it's a grand sorting effort. So if you're a interested student or community member or whatever, we are absolutely always looking for volunteers here at WUSB, so get involved, save some music, learn how to program a show, get involved, maybe do some sports casting. All of that is possible at a great community freeform station like ours.
We have a website, wusb.fm. If you can't find a way to get involved by looking at that website, you can always write to us here at Off the Wall, otw@2600.com, and we will guide you to the right place. And it's magical. The whole thing is magical. Just, and you know, if you're not in the area, maybe there's a place like this near you. Think about that.
Mm-hmm. You can bring that same energy. Maybe the things we've talked about you never thought were possible at your local community station. Maybe you have a high school station or a college station as well. Those places need your help. They're very important. Non-commercial radio is a rare gem and an oasis of ideas and consciousness. And you can get to, you can share in that. You can bring the excitement that we've shared from across the internet or across the region and share it and revive it in your own community. It's really not hard to do, but it is so exceptional in the vast landscape of stuff that's out there. So please be different and help out.
We're out of time now. You can write to us again, otw@2600.com. We'd like to hear your thoughts. Thanks for everybody who called in. Sorry for the ones we did not get to. I want to close out with some more magic, some more inspirational things that I'm hearing for the first time. Some clips from Woodstock back in 1969, and just an amazing thing that was put together in 30 days. It's just incredible what people can do if they put their minds to it. Don't ever forget that. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
All right, Chu's got a problem. He's only getting intermittent power.
No, it was just when you got up. Did you step on it?
Yes, sir.
If you stepped on it,
I got to sit. There's too much stuff to set up.
Can you check it?
You ready? All right, let's go, man.
Here it is, it's summertime. Still I haven't found my sign. And the years are over too, since I'm gone. And my daddy wonders why, how I look can make him cry. But I'll carry on his name when he dies. Though the years have had their pain, I'll continue on again till I find the road that I can travel, till I find my peace of mind. Papa says to straighten out, look at what my life's about. Try to use the head that God once gave you. And he says I'll be content if I take the road he went. But I'll never blame him for what I do. Living in a house that's high makes you feel your hands are tied. Only wish I knew when I could make it, break it, finally get inside. Surely you will make me fall, but you drive me into taking your hand. On the road that I've been bound, seems it's time I settle down. Gotta stop relying on
tomorrow, yeah. All I wanna do is sleep. Every day is like a week. Gotta find some kind of rules to follow. And my daddy wonders why, how I look can make him cry, but I'll carry on his name when he dies.
Pharmaceutical companies.
Thank you. That was called The Road to Travel. The name of this next song is I Wondered Where You'd Be.
Overdose deaths and neonatal abstinence syndrome in Oklahoma. This is a temporary public nuisance.
Yeah, kids, this is Finn's Revolution on from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We have a few great guests tonight. Jorge Arevalo of Disturbed Furniture will be joining us, and Ken Curson of the Lilacs after that. Stay tuned for some great talks, some fantastic new music right here at WUSB Stony Brook. Yeah, some great music from Essie right here on WUSB. Stony Brook, brand new. And I think we're going to hear something right now from... from Disturbed Furniture. And let's hear a little something. We're going to talk to Jorge in just a few moments. And this is brand new, called... Halo of Pain, right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Sometimes it's good